Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin the program by talking about one of the most successful programs of the UW College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. That has been to assist agriculture businesses, help them become successful. And Wisconsin Public Television has a new program set to air next week that focuses on three agriculture businesses and how they were helped by the programs of the college. We'll hear about those programs today with our guest, Heidi Zorb. Heidi is the Assistant Dean for External Relations and Advancement in the UW College of Ag and Life Sciences. Heidi, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here today.
With me by phone today as well, Kat Becker. She's an organic farmer, owns Stony Acres Farms in Athens, Wisconsin, with her husband. They're leaders in central Wisconsin's local food movement. I'm sure we can say that. They're also very passionate advocates for the family farm, and I know I can say that as well. So it's going to be fun talking with them. Hi, Kat.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us today. And just to our listeners, what do you think about the UW helping out ag businesses? I hope you'll give a call with your maybe with your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. And Heidi, start with you for a bit. Of course, I know a lot about the College of Ag and Life Sciences myself, and it's changed a lot, certainly technology-wise, over the years. I kind of look at it, there's sort of three missions. There's certainly teaching, and we have graduate and undergraduate students. There's a research component that is constantly going on, and then there's getting that information out to the public. But things have, maybe talk a little bit about the college itself.
Okay, great. Thanks, Larry. The College of Ag and Life Sciences on the UW-Madison campus has 19 academic departments in a wide variety of areas. And the college really came out of the country's land grant system, where public universities were given money by the federal government to come up with information and education that would help citizens participate in our democracy. And of course, agriculture as a growing part of our economy in the 1800s was an extremely important part of that portfolio of activities. And that's a mission that we continue to follow today and we take very seriously. As you said, agriculture has changed a lot since the Civil War. When the original land grant program went through. But the content area that we cover in the college, which includes fundamental discoveries about the way plants, animals, and people work, is still important information that eventually needs to get translated to farmers and other kinds of practitioners around the state. So it's a mission we take very seriously. And the three areas you mentioned have a great interplay with each other. What happens in our classrooms changes because of what we hear in the field, and the kind of research we do and the questions that we look for answers to are informed by both our students and our citizen partners.
And I think the general public is benefited from the work of the college as well.
Well, I would certainly like to think so, and this show seems like a good example. The long-standing tradition of sharing our discoveries, whether they be about insects and household plant diseases, or if they're about how to improve the efficiency of a dairy operation in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, so lots going on. And Kat, I want to bring you in. Tell us about your farm.
So we are located in Athens, Wisconsin, which is in north central Wisconsin. We're about 40 minutes north of Marshfield, about 40 minutes northwest of Wausau. So that's where we're situated in the state. We're a diversified organic farm. So we have about, 15-ish acres of vegetables, including some fallowed land. We have a CSA program. That's where most of our efforts and time go. We also rotationally graze beef herd. We raise pigs. We have some egg-laying chickens, some maple syrup, some small grains. And then we do a once-a-week pizza night on the farm, which is gotten some attention in the last couple of years.
That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, so we're kind of diversified in many ways, and we're a family farm, meaning that we provide the majority of the labor on our farm, but we also do have several employees. So that's kind of how we're set up.
Yeah. How difficult is it to run a successful family farm these days?
That's a good question. I feel like we've been extremely lucky, and also we've been able to apply things that we're really good at to our farm. So it's certainly not easy. It's a ton of work, but I feel like we, 10 years in, have kind of hit our stride. So I guess that's a good thing. I feel like we've developed a successful agricultural business, and both of us clearly benefited from education at UW-Madison. But, I'd say it's a fairly difficult thing. It depends on what you do. We direct market everything, so we are not subject to commodity markets. So I think most farmers in the state are, and that's where many of the problems in our agricultural system are. So
yeah.
We are in some ways exempt from some of those things, although clearly our communities and neighbors are tied into those things.
Yeah. You both graduated from UW, so I can I know the ties, but how are you inspired to work with the UW and the college?
That's a good question. So we actually work with a variety of folks at the university and different programs. We're on the Citizens Advisory Council for the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. So we have that direct tie, and we go to several meetings a year and help, with edited documents and giving our feedback on research and directions for research through them. We've worked on the Organic Potato Project that I think we're going to talk a little bit more about, and are also working with Julie Dawson in the horticulture department as well. But I feel like, it's kind of a hard question. We've drawn on so many resources from the university over time. I think, the pioneering research on rotational grazing really came out of the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, and we drew upon a lot of that history. So, I guess some of the ways that we've related to the university come from people approaching us and asking us if we want to participate. But I think our positive experiences with really specific sections of the university have allowed us to increase our ties and kind of reached out to other projects. So I feel like our university collaborations are only growing at this point, and part of that has to do with the direction that the university is going in terms of participatory research, in terms of sustainable and organic agriculture, which are some big changes, at least in the last 10 years. Those things weren't necessarily there before that.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that Wisconsin Public Television has a new special show premiering next week that talks about three different farms and how UW has worked with them to change the way they do business. And Kat, your farm is, of course, one of those that's featured. And I've got a clip from the show. The woman with the accent in the clip is Ruth Genger. She's a plant pathology researcher with Cal. So let's listen to that right now.
Working together has proved to be a two-way street for Stony Acres and the university. Researchers are able to test their work right on the farm, and Kat and Tony now have a new variety of potato on their hands.
We've actually adopted a potato that we've taken out of the trials, Papacacho, which is like a fingerling style, like a longer, leaner potato, but works well in our clay soils. And we're like, we're going to take this into our rotation.
It's become a bit of a market niche for them. I think at the farmer's market, they are the people with the crazy potato. And it's a draw. It's one of the secrets to their success, actually, is to embrace variety. I think farmers are, in general, just natural innovators. They are always trying new things, and definitely I see that when I go to Kat and Tony's.
Well, now you've got my interest up, Kat. Tell us about that potato.
The Papacacho potato. So I think Doug Rouse, who is also in the plant pathology department, introduced that potato to the larger Organic Potato Project, and Ruth had it in the trial. I should actually know when we started doing the Organic Potato Project, but I'm not actually sure when it was. I think it was like almost 7 years ago. Maybe it was a little bit less than that, It's been in the trial the entire time, and we've gotten to be better farmers, I think, in that time period. But I have to say, the Papacacho performs really well in low nitrogen, high weed competition environments. For our potato, for our potato plots is extremely important. And even though our fertility and our potato growing skills have improved, and some of the types of technology we use, like a potato tiller, you know, we used to do a lot by hand, are things that we have now, it still continues to do really well. And so it's kind of a beautiful potato. It's like a red potato, red, pink, darker skin, and you cut it open and it has kind of a white, yellow flesh with some variegated pink splotches in it. But it does well in the farming system. It looks cool, so we can sell it in, you know, at the farmer's market along with other specialty potatoes. And it also has kind of like a sweet potato-like skin, so it's much thicker skin than some other potatoes. And that's another unique thing. And so I think some people like it because of that. And, of course, it has a unique look to it. And that, yeah, I guess we have saved seed, and we have I think this is the first year that we have two full beds, so we have 500-foot beds. It's not that much, but of those potatoes, which we're excited for. And Ruth, who you heard talking, she has helped us do virus testing so that we have an idea of if we're carrying a virus load into the field, and kind of continues to help us with that seed-saving side of things, because potato seed is really unique, and it's hard to get clean potato seed. So
she's been really, Ruth's been really helpful to you.
Ruth is wonderful. Ruth is, you know, one of my favorite university employees from a practical standpoint. But, I mean, she's wonderful to work with. I think both her and Julie Dawson come from this tradition or understanding of participatory research where they treat you as equals and kind of have engaged our knowledge. But also, Ruth has helped us become better potato growers. You know, she, you know, is doing these trials, but beyond that, she's on many different organic potato farms. And so through her, we're able to learn a lot about what other people are doing at many different scales, and then also what types of production systems have worked well. And she's also, she's taught us a lot of, you know, what we should actually be worried about, and what, you know, I have a tendency to, we don't spray anything on our farm, even though many organic farmers do use organic pesticides and fungicides. And she's been very reassuring and helpful in assessing risk around disease and pests for us, because that's something that we clearly have to monitor a lot. And so on many levels, she's been there. And it's always like some of the most fun days when she comes out to evaluate potatoes, which she is doing tomorrow, actually.
So oh, cool.
Tomorrow and Friday, both her and Julie Dawson will be on our farm those 2 days. It's very timely. And she'll be looking at potatoes together with me and determining what ones we can and may grow based on whatever we decide we want to look at. So
oh, that's really fun. Really cool. Heidi, is this a typical story from the businesses you've worked with?
I think there are a lot of producers in the state who can tell a story similar to Kat's. Of course, they might be working in different areas, but vegetable breeding is an enormous strength at Wisconsin. And we have so many people who've come up with new varieties, not only of potatoes, but of carrots and cucumbers. And then, of course, you move into our fruit industries, cranberries, which is an enormous part of the agricultural economy in the state. Wisconsin produces 60% of the world's cranberries. And so I think there's a long tradition of breeders who were housed in our college applying their science to come up with varieties that could meet the needs of the growers, whether that's from a production system standpoint, you know, the kinds of conditions they want to grow those fruits and vegetables in, or if it's the environmental conditions, what their soil is like.
Yeah. I'm thinking back of all the years that I've been doing the show, and over time visiting with people who have a new variety of this or that. And I don't even want to mention names because I'd miss somebody, but it's been going on for quite a long time.
Yes.
A really long time. Well, I want to give our, we'll be hearing from another farm family, a part of the show from Wisconsin Public Television coming up, but I want to give you a chance to join in. You may have questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share, and I hope you will. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. right now having some fun talking about Wisconsin's homegrown farmers and the work done by the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Our two guests, Heidi Zorb, Assistant Dean for External Relations in the college. Kat Becker is an organic farmer, owner of Stony Acres Farm in Athens, Wisconsin. And Kat, by the way, you have a website, do you not?
I do, yeah.
And I'm sure, Jill, have we got that? Oh, yeah, she's giving me the thumbs up. What do you mean? I've got that up already. So there's a link to the college, and there's a link to Kat's website as well on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, again, The Larry Mueller Show. And once again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your own comments. Another farm that was featured was Rosie Lane Holstein's in Watertown. And the owners, Lloyd and Daphne Holterman, they've been guests on the show as well. And Daphne actually was a student in my department in life sciences communication a few years back now. But they're using genetics to produce healthier and more productive cows. Different kind of farm for sure from Kat's, a very large farm. But let's listen to a clip from the Wisconsin Public Television show.
It was their insight into cattle genetics that was about to have Lloyd and Daphne looking at cows in a different way.
There's a lot of things that we thought over the years were true. Bigger cows give more milk. It's not true. The way the cow is built would make them last longer. It's really not true. Through genomics, they're identifying the genes that trigger immune response, and so we can breed the cows healthier, we can breed the cows to calve easier, we can breed for moderate size, for fertility.
My name is Kent Weigel. I'm chair of the Dairy Science Department, and I'm a dairy cattle geneticist here at UW-Madison. I've known Lloyd and Daphne for 20 years, I would say. They were early adopters of breeding for health and fertility, longevity. They jumped right on and said, this is what we really think is important.
Lloyd and Daphne's vision for their farm was to have the healthiest and most productive cows possible. Years of collaborating with the university and building on their own knowledge of cow genetics has Rosie Lane right on track.
And genetics, Heidi, is, I mean, we've got some really top researchers in that field.
Absolutely, and that applies to dairy cattle. You heard Dr. Kent Weigel's voice there, but it applies across a number of important agricultural species, including potatoes. So that is definitely an area where this university has amazing strength, and it's a perfect example of how fundamental scientific discoveries do have an impact on everybody's lives because it ends up impacting what we eat on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Kat, you have cattle and pigs on your farm. Have you benefited from help in those areas as well?
I mean, I would say largely the university, you know, in terms of most of their research in cattle, has focused on dairy production, although they do have beef and things like that. And we are not only outside of that, but we have a production system that I think now the university is quite supportive of, but I think for a long term time, I mean, I think the university system kind of pushed confinement agriculture in dairy and beef. And so we've certainly drawn on resources from the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, a lot of that from farmers who kind of broke out of confinement small-scale dairy and put in systems with rotational grazing. So in that way, yes. But a lot of what we do is knowledge that was formed largely outside of the university that I think the university has embraced more over the last 10 years. So in terms of our cattle, most of our knowledge is from other farmers. Certainly we've drawn on extension and grazing networks, but we don't work with anybody in cattle genetics, for instance.
Sure. Sure. Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Again, you can call in at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Clarence in Watertown. Clarence, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, sir. Yes. Quite familiar with the Holdermans and all that. We live in Watertown on the other side of Watertown. And we used to get student interns, CALS interns, through the summer semesters. And haven't had any of those in quite a while. I mean, we've been farming here since 1972, and a couple of our interns, one of them's a vet, another one has gone on, she and her husband run grazing seasonal calving operation and, you know, things like that. One young man had a liberal arts trajectory and found out he couldn't quite get a job, so he shifted to horticulture.
Ah, cool.
But he wanted a little dairy background. And I don't know. Now, we're talking to our milk plant rep, and they are, almost everybody seems to be phasing out the use of BST, BGH.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite wondering what the heck is the problem with this?
All right. So I don't know that we can answer that question right here.
Right. I think that's right, Clarence. I'm not the right scientific expert to answer that question, but I can tell you that there, of course, for years has been work going on in research labs in the college about the effects of that product on the marketplace. And there's also research that's going on about consumer acceptance of certain kinds of production systems and certain kinds of ingredients. So those are certainly questions that the university gets feedback on that end up involved in the kinds of research we conduct.
First comment was interesting to me because he's had interns in the past and obviously went on to successful careers. What about the internship program? Would Clarence or anybody else have an opportunity to work with interns?
Absolutely. We really encourage our undergraduate students to participate in internships. We'd really like it if all of them had that opportunity before they graduated. And, of course, there are some logistical reasons that can limit it. But Clarence's stories seem to illustrate nicely that regardless of what kind of academic trajectory you're on, sometimes a practical experience you have can really change your own professional direction. And we think that's an incredibly important thing that our students should be taking advantage of as part of their education here.
I know that's, I'm thinking back to some interns. There are many students within the college. In fact, the majority of students from the college do not come from farms anymore.
That's correct.
And so I know there's been a number of students, who wanted that experience so that they could say they had that experience.
Absolutely. And we try and address that in a number of ways. Some of our classes try and make sure that they take kids out into the field and they visit farms so minimally they can see what working business looks like. We also have a network of research farms across the state, and each one of those farms hires student interns too, which can be a great opportunity for somebody who grew up in a suburban or urban environment to see what it's like to work on a research farm. And we do have people like Clarence who welcome our students to their operations to give them a hands-on look at what it takes to be a successful farmer today.
One of the ways to do that for Clarence or anybody else is to go to the website, the College of Ag and Life Sciences website, and there you'll find a student area, and there's something called interns, and there's an internship office there. Internship people.
Absolutely. The Career Services Office in the College of Ag and Life Sciences is always looking for people who are interested in hosting student interns.
Yeah. So get in touch. Go to our Facebook page if you want. Click on the college website and you can find out some more about getting an intern or possibly working with an intern in your business. Would love to hear from that. Thanks, Clarence. Mike in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to ask kind of a historical question. I went to the university starting in 1968, and there was ROTC that was required with the Army, like for four sessions or something like that. Being a land-grant college, that was a requirement, and I don't know if that's still going on, or is there still some connection to the military with the UW?
So the kind of program that you mentioned, Mike, doesn't exist any longer. We don't have a requirement that our students serve. However, the college does continue to have a working relationship with different parts of the U.S. military. A recent example is when people were deploying to the Middle East, there was a battalion from Wisconsin that was specifically focused on helping with agriculture in that area. And many of our faculty and staff offered a crash course to some of the folks who were deploying with that unit to make sure that they had the kind of technical expertise to serve as extension agents, if you will, when they were in that area of the world.
And there are still offices on the campus for Army ROTC, Air Force ROTC, Navy ROTC for sure.
Absolutely. It's just not a requirement.
Yeah. So students
it's an optional activity.
Students can still take that. I know some of my students have taken some classes through the Navy course. So it's still there, but that program that you talked about, Mike, is no longer a requirement. Thanks a lot for that question. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. The other person who is highlighted in the show is Robert Pierce. And Robert is described as an urban farmer. What does that mean, Heidi?
So that's another take on food production that's becoming increasingly popular in the state. Robert is really focused on growing fruits and vegetables for the most part in Madison, within the city limits, and making fresh produce available to his neighbors.
And do you remember how he decided to become an organic farmer way back in 1983? It's not that far ago, but
so
long enough.
Yeah, the program really explores that question with him, and he talks about how when he was thinking about growing up, how important his grandmother's garden always was to him and their whole family and his neighborhood, and how he really wanted to rekindle that in his current community.
And he's working with the Nelson Institute, if I'm not mistaken. How is he working with them to help the community?
He is. So, of course, urban farming has different kinds of technical challenges than if you're on 300 or even 15 acres somewhere else in a more rural setting. So there's technical support that Robert and some of his colleagues have been getting from different folks at the university. And there's also been a lot of discussion about markets and marketplace. Kat made reference to that too.
Yeah.
In finding a market for the kind of potatoes they're growing. So a lot of the support that is going to urban farmers is also very focused on what kind of markets they will get access to.
And if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember from the film, but he also works with folks who are out on parole or who have finished their jail time.
Absolutely. So he's really committed to bringing lots of different kinds of people to food production, which I think is really an exciting opportunity for everybody.
What, Cap, what are you doing on your farm? Well, you've got one thing that brings your community together a lot, and that's the pizza night.
We do that, yes. We certainly have lots of a pretty wide community, but lots of our rural neighbors, lots of dairy farmers, actually. So we don't allow call-ins for pizza, but unless you're a local dairy farmer, and then you can call in pizzas. So we actually have quite the dairy farming clientele, because it's hard to go out to dinner if you're a dairy farmer. And then, you know, we have our CSA, and so our CSA has always been, community-supported agriculture, has always been the backbone of our farm, and that community informs a lot of the decisions we make about our farm, and it's become its own kind of self-sustaining community as well. So, you know, for us, those are definitely the main venues for community participation, but obviously we participate and live in a rural community where we have very strong relationships with our neighbors, and so that certainly is part of it as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the whole business of the community support agriculture, it can be inspiring and a lot of fun, but also a lot of work, and it takes some pretty good business sense too. People's tastes change, and you can't just suddenly grow something new to meet on the spur of the moment to meet the latest kind of fad. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, we don't actually really, I mean, aside from kale, which we've always grown, which became trendy, surprisingly, the most surprising vegetable to become trendy is kale. Aside from people's taste changing for them to, like, be more enthusiastic about kale or something like that, the CSA is actually pretty incredible because it allows us to grow an incredible diversity of crops. It allows us to choose varieties, unlike people who are trying to access wholesale markets or within commodity markets, even in vegetables. We don't have to bend to the whims of whatever the larger, you know, agribusiness distributors want. So CSA is actually pretty freeing. We obviously focus on bread and butter vegetables. We live in North Central Wisconsin, so there's some things we've kind of introduced to the area that might be more normal to see at the Madison Farmers Market or something like that. But CSA is liberating, I think, at least from our standpoint, because we get to grow so many, you know, we grow over 80 different types of crops, and then within that, many, many different varieties. So we don't even have to deal with the niche in the same way. I mean, we do sell to farmers markets and chefs, but we have a lot of freedom, which is wonderful.
I bet you sell a bit of kale, though.
We do sell kale, yes. We do sell kale. It's not like a big cash cow for the farm, but we definitely sell kale.
Okay. Well, let's see. Well, that's callers online. Let's go to Mary in Viroqua. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Yes. I was interested in if I could get a recommendation on what type of computer program is available and is the best one for a farm unit to use.
So, I would direct you to one of the centers that's housed in our college that's jointly managed with UW Extension, the Center for Dairy Profitability, even if you're not a dairy farm, does make a number of tools available for producers to use in business operation decision making.
So I need to go to the Farm Management Specialist Center? Okay.
Here, let's get the title right.
I'm sorry, I said it too quickly.
Well, I am presently using an Ames program that I did get from them, but it's from 2001, and I didn't even know if they were still in business or. But it's getting outdated.
Yeah. So, repeat that.
So the Center for Dairy Profitability.
Yes.
Would be the place that I would start. Because they constantly upload their farmer decision-making tools.
Okay.
So you hopefully won't be using something that has non-compatible technology.
And how would I get their number, or how would I get in contact with them?
You can. Are you online? You could go to Facebook?
Yes.
If you go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page.
Okay.
And just there's a link to the College of Ag and Life Sciences website. And if you go to that, just click on that and then write in Center for Dairy Profitability.
Okay.
And it'll take you right there.
Because I love the old program I have, but it's really outdated for new computers and that type of thing. So, thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's see. Mike in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I got two questions, actually. But the first one is, when I went to school in Madison in 1960... I was told, maybe erroneously, or maybe I didn't get it right, that that you could take courses free after a certain age, after you graduate. And going back to school, which I do, I noticed that you can only audit these. You don't get any credit. And back then, they kind of intimated that, yes, you could get credit. Point number two, there's a program called Silver Sneakers for senior citizens. You can join YMCAs and any other thing. But for some reason, like the Klotschke Center in Milwaukee and I don't know what it's like in Madison, they don't recognize the Silver Sneakers card, which is a big mistake because people that are older have money and they donate money to charities. And the you is a charity.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about Silver Sneakers, but we've got audit and credits. Certainly, I know quite a few. I had in my own class retired folks who sit in, but it is for audit, not for credit.
That's right. And that's true across UW system. Every campus and program has slightly different rules. If you're interested in being a senior guest auditor on the UW-Madison campus, the place to go for information is the Division of Continuing Studies. They can connect you with the appropriate admissions process, which is not very onerous, in order to audit any of our classes. But it's true, free senior guest auditing does not come with credit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Kat, give us your site again, your website.
Our website is stonyacresfarm.net. So it's Stony is S-T-O-N-E-Y, acres, many acres, and then one farm, singular, .net. We have many stony acres and one farm.
Many stones in one farm, eh?
Yes, That's a
good name for a lot of farms. I know there's a lot of rock picking that goes on across the state of Wisconsin.
Sadly, we have not invented a technology for that.
Yeah.
No, there are rock rakes, and there are some technologies, but I think most of it still happens by hand.
Yep.
Well, how are you looking at your business now? Are you profitable? Are you happy with how things are going?
We are, yes. I mean, those are totally different questions. We are profitable, yes, and we are happy with how things are going. We've had a lot of growth and changes over the last few years around especially Pizza Night, and I guess now that we are financially stable, it means that we get to make lots of exciting decisions about what things we want to do the most. So we're in that kind of sweet spot where we're able to rethink the farm and think about where we want to go, and so we feel great about it.
Well, that's wonderful, and I'm glad from your earlier comments as well that the college has played a role for you, the College of Ag and Life Sciences, and we've got a link, of course, on our Facebook page to the college website, as I mentioned a few times now, and the Wisconsin Public Television show premieres. It's called Wisconsin's Homegrown Farmers. And it's at 7:30 on Thursday, September 8th. So if you're in, you should be able to receive a Wisconsin Public Television pretty much anywhere in the state. Tune in at 7:30 on Thursday, September 8th, and you'll get to see Kat and her husband and a whole lot more. Heidi, you're not in it, though, are you?
I am not in it, no, but I certainly appreciated hearing all the great stories of the diversity of farmers in the state of Wisconsin and the opportunities that they bring to the university to help us teach students and explore new questions.
Heidi, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. And Kat?
Yep.
You got a great business going there, and you're a wonderful speaker. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, Kat Becker is an organic farmer, owns Stony Acres Farm in Athens, Wisconsin. Kat and her husband are really leaders in Central Wisconsin's local food movement and are passionate advocates for the family farm. Heidi Zorb, Assistant Dean for External Relations and Advancement in the UW-Madison College of Ag and Life Sciences. Heidi, thank you again. Appreciate it very much. Fun talking with them. And I think you're going to enjoy our program coming up as well. I'll be speaking with Alexandra Risen. Alex is the author of a new book. It's called Unearthed, Love, Acceptance, and Other Lessons from an Abandoned Garden. I just finished reading it last night, as a matter of fact, and really enjoyed it. And I know you're going to enjoy it, too. So stay with us here on the Ideas Network.